arguing for the Dieters is it Megna? Attorney Megna, you may take the podium. If you would prefer that podium higher or lower, there's a button on your left side.
Seated at council table with me is Attorney Bill Pocan, who also represents the petitioners in this matter. Chief Justice, Justices, may it please the Court. The Court of Appeals' decision in this case is a step backwards for consumers. The Lemon Law has been weakened with the addition of a new element. The lower court instructed the petitioners to seek redress under the UCC. This court, in Hughes versus Chrysler, recognized the inadequate, uncertain, and expensive remedies under the Uniform Commercial Code as well as under the Magnuson-Moss Act. And the Court of Appeals, instead of following the direction in Hughes, suggested that the petitioner should have just walked away from this deal and sued for a refund of their deposit. And why? Only because they knew about the problems at time of delivery, not when they purchased the vehicle even 4 days earlier, but when they took delivery. Scratches, the paint was defective, and the vehicle was covered with scratches. The Lemon Law is intended to supplant the UCC. The Court of Appeals instruction to invoke the UCC undermines the Lemon Law, what this court has said about the Lemon Law, and the intentions of the Lemon Law.
I don't know very much about the Lemon Law, but suppose that during the warranty period, I bring the car in, and the dealer in doing a standard, you know, 3,000, 5,000 check, injures the car in some way, negligently. So I bring it back home, and it was okay when it went in, and it's now not okay. And something is really awful with the transmission. You can pick any part of the car for several thousand dollars. Is Chrysler liable under the Lemon Law?
I believe they are, Chief Justice, and Chrysler in this case, in their brief, even concedes that they would be liable if this damage would have occurred during the warranty period while the dealer was installing the accessories. The negligence that resulted causing damage is conceded by Chrysler even. That it would be covered.
It's conceded, but then why isn't this during the warranty period?
In this case, why isn't...
What's Chrysler's argument that it's not... I didn't understand that. That's why I asked you my question.
Their argument is that the damage occurred prior to the warranty going in effect, and therefore the damage that was caused is not covered under their warranty.
Chrysler originally argued in this case, as I recall in the trial court, that the parts were not Mopar parts, and then that was determined that no, that was incorrect, that these were Mopar parts, which were requested to be put on by your client. And it was during the, as you said, the installation of the tonneau cover and the other accessories that this damage occurred.
Yes,
my question is just from a public policy standpoint. Now, the manufacturer, I think, makes a good point that, look, we delivered a truck that was free of all defects, and that should be the extent. That's what the Lemon Law talks about, and that's what the Court of Appeals addresses also, that at least initially, the Lemon Law is to cover manufacturers doing a better job with the vehicle that they are delivering.
Well, certainly Before we even get to the Lemon Law, though, because the Lemon Law is to enforce warranties, and before we even get to the question of Lemon Law coverage, we must look to determine whether there is warranty coverage for this problem. And there clearly is warranty coverage, regardless that it happened prior to delivery. Many problems with vehicles occur prior to delivery. Specifically in the warranty, the coverage for manufacturer preparation, problems that cause difficulties or defects with manufacturer preparation are covered under their warranty. All manufacturer preparation is going to take place prior to sale, even prior to delivery. So the time that the defect occurred really doesn't matter. What matters is that there is coverage under the warranty that Chrysler drafted and gave to these petitioners when they purchased the vehicle.
Now, Chrysler could have said, as I read the warranty, I'm looking at the red brief, page, appendix 68, Chrysler could have said any alterations or any accessories, whether they're Mopar parts or not, would not be covered by this warranty. But what they did say was that if you read this, except for genuine Mopar accessories approved by Chrysler for dealer installation. So the understanding, at least that I got from that, was that, well, if they're Mopar parts and the dealer puts them on, then they would be covered by the warranty.
Clearly, by Chrysler's own warranty.
And they conceded that, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
So their main argument is that this was not a hidden defect, that this was something that your client knew up front about these scratches after they came to pick the vehicle back up.
Yes. That was caused by the dealer. There's no dispute that the dealer caused these problems while installing the Mopar parts, and that the problems were not on the vehicle at the time they purchased the vehicle.
And see, what I started with Chrysler's argument is sue the dealer,
but for what? Why can we sue the dealer? We can't sue the dealer. This vehicle, the petitioners tried to get out of this deal. They said, we don't want it. Not only, the first response from the dealer was, well, you're going to forfeit your deposit. The second response that didn't even come up, though, under the terms of the contract, if the petitioners back out, the dealership can sue them for 5% of the purchase price or actual damages. Nothing was changed in the warranty that was given to the petitioners when they purchased this vehicle. Nothing. And that warranty covers these problems.
Mr. Magna,
yes.
My understanding that Wisconsin is not alone with a Lemon Law. Are there any other states that have taken the approach that our Court of Appeals did, that there has to be an awareness situation? Or in other words, let me restate that, that if there is awareness at the time of delivery, the Lemon Law doesn't cover.
We are not aware of any court of appeals in any state that has adopted that, and we have researched that issue. And Professor Miley also researched that issue when he wrote his amicus brief. So we tried to thoroughly research that to see if there was any precedent, any place that would allow for the hidden defect that our Court of Appeals suggested applies. Under that, this position, this decision, we feel there are really two absurd options for a consumer, for a purchaser. The first option, the purchaser can go to the dealer with a mechanic and with a lawyer. The mechanic will inspect the vehicle. find out if there are any problems. If there are no problems, that's fine, then make the purchase. If there is a problem, however, then the consumer is going to consult with the lawyer to find out what his rights are. Can he walk away from this under the UCC? Does the nonconformity rise to a level of a substantial nonconforming good under the UCC so I can walk away? Furthermore, what about the right to cure, Mr. Lawyer? Does the seller have a right to cure also under the UCC, and have they properly invoked that right to cure? Also, what if they sue me? What are my rights? What do you think I can win? Do you think I'll win this case? Will I have to pay 5% or actual damages? And from my understanding of the UCC, Mr. Lawyer, there's no provision for attorney's fees, so I'm going to be out there on my own. If they sue me, I may not even be able to raise a defense. The other option is that the purchaser goes to the dealership blindfolded, says, I want that car. I don't want to test drive it. I don't want to inspect it. I don't want any representations. It's a Chrysler car. It's engineered to be a great car. Today they're all bright silver anyway. I'll take it. Let me get it off the lot, get it home, then I'll inspect it. If there's a problem, then I can bring the car back. Let them fix it. They'll probably be able to fix it. But if they don't fix it within the guidelines of the Lemon Law, four times, or if it's out of service 30 days, I will at least have my options under the Lemon Law. They will not have been lost because I happen to do a thorough inspection at the time of purchase.
Well, full employment for lawyers and mechanics and blindfold manufacturers, then.
Well.
What's wrong with that?
Well, I guess that's pretty good.
Answer the question, Gus.
That was a rhetorical question which does not require a response.
We believe... Oh, excuse me. Did you want that?
No.
All right, thank you.
I was giving you an opportunity to get your drink of water, that's all.
Thank you very much. We believe the Lemon Law is a policy-driven warranty enforcement statute. And in this case, Chrysler has tried to avoid its obligations on three separate occasions. First, as Justice Wilcox pointed out, they argued they're not Mopar parts. Therefore, under Nissan versus Malone, we have no obligation. But when it came out that they were Mopar parts, Chrysler changed its story. They said, well, the dealer caused the problem, and we're not responsible. On that point, the Court of Appeals rightfully rejected Chrysler's argument, and we do agree with that portion of the Court of Appeals decision, and they said Chrysler is dead wrong on that point. They are responsible for the negligent installation of its own authorized Mopar parts when damage is caused by the dealership. Now Chrysler has taken its third position throughout this litigation, and that's the problem occurred prior to the time period of the warranty. The petitioners feel that this is exactly the kind of mischief that other consumers can expect. And this is the type of mischief that a remedial statute such as the Lemon Law is intended to avoid. Exactly what's happening in this case. Chrysler has tried to skirt its obligations and hide from its responsibility in three different ways. This court in Hughes, as well as the Court of Appeals in Dussault versus Chrysler and Church versus Chrysler, stated that the purpose of the Lemon Law was to put a purchaser of a new vehicle back in the position the purchaser was in on the date of purchase. That's not what happened in this case. If we were to follow that direction, these petitioners would be put in the position they were in On December 12, 1995, the day they purchased this vehicle, and it is conceded and it is not disputed that they purchased it on December 12th. The problem occurred between December 12th and December 16th. And on December 16th, they picked up the vehicle, they took delivery. So under this decision, any damage otherwise covered under the warranty would be excluded from Lemon Law protection. And we suggest that the lower court's opinion is contrary to the plain meaning of the Lemon Law and the plain meaning of the warranty that Chrysler itself drafted. And we respectfully request that decision be overturned. And if there are no further questions, that would conclude my argument.
No further questions, but you have 5 minutes in rebuttal, Mr. Magna.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Govan, representing Chrysler Corporation.
May it please the court. My name is Sean Govan. I represent Daimler Chrysler, formerly known as Chrysler Corporation, in this proceeding today. This case, I believe, from the respondent's standpoint, turns on two critical factors. First and foremost, this defect, the scratch in the paint, is unrelated, completely unrelated to the workmanship of the product manufactured by Chrysler, the materials provided and used in the product manufactured by Chrysler, and the factory preparation of that product that is distributed and manufactured and distributed by Chrysler.
But isn't this the focus of this inquiry whether or not it's covered by warranty rather than whether this has anything to do with how the vehicle was manufactured? Isn't that the focus of the inquiry under the Lemon Law?
Yes, and the reason I cite those three elements is because if you turn to the very beginning, the very scope of the warranty, and I would draw the court's attention to page 3, what is covered?
This is appendix starting at page 63.
Thank you.
Pardon?
Thank you. The basic warranty begins at delivery, and in the second paragraph, the basic warranty covers the cost of all parts and labor needed to repair any item on your truck that's defective in material, workmanship, or factory preparation. That is not present here. That is one of the reasons that Chrysler had argued all along, despite the fact the Court of Appeals disagreed with us, that the warranty was not applicable.
Go ahead.
This is a product that, at the time it was purchased, was not defective in material, workmanship, or factory preparation.
All right, now.
When was it purchased?
It was purchased on the 12th of December, 1995. And delivery, the effective date of this warranty and the effective date of the Lemon Law is December 16th. That's been conceded all along through all levels.
But counsel, in your warranty, and I asked opposing counsel the same question, in your, on page 68 of the appendix, it indicates that except for genuine Mopar accessories approved by Chrysler for dealer installation, items are not covered, which, in other words, but are not limited to installation, but except. How would you read that? You're saying that wouldn't the implication be there, and I think there has been the cost of repairs by using genuine Mopar accessories approved by Chrysler are covered.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They're covered. However, we have to have, both under the Lemon Law and the warranty, an effective warranty in place. That has been our argument. And what the Court of Appeals said is...
When did that warranty for the Mopar parts get into?
I'm sorry?
When was there a warranty on the Mopar parts?
I believe the warranty on the Mopar parts is when they are installed.
When were they installed?
it would have been installed prior to the 16th.
Right.
Okay. So is your position that anything that happened before the 16th isn't covered because the warranty begins on the 16th?
The warranty on this automobile.
Okay. But if there's a defect in the transmission that occurred in the Chrysler factory, that occurred before the 16th?
Precisely. That's why this case is so unique. That is a latent defect. Nobody has ever argued that latent defects or hidden defects are not covered under the warranty or the lemon law.
Let me ask you, all right, we've got the transmission problem. You're saying it's latent, except I take it out for a test drive on the 12th. Let's just use the same dates. And I hear something grinding. And the salesperson, the dealer says, don't worry, we'll fix it. Is that covered?
That would be covered. That's why the two examples, the hypotheticals and the amicus brief, are not applicable here. Those are latent defects. The consumer...
No, this defect was known to me at the time. I saw the scratches. I heard the noise, and I was told it would be fixed. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, if I understand your hypothetical correctly, Your Honor, you're saying that this vehicle exhibits certain...
No, we just used the transmission example that the chief pointed out, and having had a few vehicles that make grinding noise, I heard a noise, and the dealer said it would be fixed.
And I think the distinction between that, and maybe I'm all wrong on this, but the distinction that I find there is you're listening to a sound. You don't know if it's tied into the transmission or other aspects of the powertrain. That is a defect that is certainly present. You hear something's wrong, but you don't know exactly what that condition is. Here, the petitioners knew. It was right on the surface.
Well,
it was right there.
Let's say I'm driving the car and the wheel falls off, and I put it back on, and
right.
You said you'd fix it. I knew that. I had it in my hand, or the shifting lever came off, or the brake pedal broke, or whatever.
Let me put it this way. Those are all things that can be directly pinpointed on the manufacturer as a problem with their material or their workmanship or their factory preparation. We don't have that here.
Well,
that transmission
the issue.
Was... I'm sorry.
Is that the cutting edge that it's traceable to Chrysler? Because I'll give you the next example, which is I bring that car in for a 6,000-mile checkup, and it's fine. It needs an oil change. I bring it back out, and its transmission is gone because they did something. The dealer did something to it. Is Chrysler liable under this lemon law?
Well, I don't necessarily think so there, because that wasn't warranty-related work. That was maintenance work, which is specifically excluded. That was maintenance work.
Doesn't your warranty specifically assume responsibility for damage that occurs in the installation by the dealer of genuine Mopar parts?
It does if it's warranty-related work. And that's why what I'm trying to communicate.
It doesn't say that, though.
In other words, you've written it to say exactly what you indicated.
It doesn't say what you say it says. It says we assume responsibility for damages or defects, repair, or adjustments that might be caused or needed because of the user installation of genuine Mopar parts.
Right.
Which is the fact situation that we have here. Right?
Correct.
So the real issue in this case is not whether it's covered, but whether the Court of Appeals did the right thing in saying that there's no intention that the lemon law cover anything except for hidden defects.
Correct. My argument has been all along that I don't believe the warranty applies here. But that being said, the Court of Appeals decision should be upheld based upon numerous public policy arguments and based upon the argument that they asserted the lemon law was not intended to apply to this situation.
Okay. If we can focus on that, why is that, since it doesn't anywhere in the law say that?
The lemon law does state at two different locations that it should take effect upon delivery. And the Court of Appeals cited that within their decision, that it should take effect at the point of delivery. In the Court of Appeals decision, I think they properly identified the fact that this is a self-enforcing statute, certainly, and that it was intended to create some sort of quality control in the manufacturers. In other words, keep their feet to the fire and stand behind the products that they manufacture. Also, it was to put the consumers on an equal footing or a better footing to deal with the large, oversized manufacturer who has an unequal position in the marketplace. And so the Lemon Law certainly had all those intents, but in this case, you don't necessarily advance those intentions because, one, you're not going to affect the quality. We don't have a quality control issue with Chrysler or their product. It was a quality control issue with the dealership. Second of all, you're not putting the consumer back in the position they thought they were, because in the position they thought they were in is they were getting a scratched vehicle.
That could be repaired.
And if
that's what they thought. That's
so they thought. And that was a representation that was made, apparently, by the dealership. Therefore, that is where their remedy lies. The arguments that are made in the amicus brief, the reply brief, and the petitioner's brief, that, well, they're left having to find some way to get their $400 security deposit back. Under these circumstances, what small claims commissioner, what judge, what DOT official under Chapter 139 or 140 of the Administrative Transportation Code would say, ladies and gentlemen, buyers, you've got to take delivery of this scratch vehicle? This was a vehicle that was never in their possession. They never had any direction or control over it. These consumers would have a whole slew of remedies available to them through the DOT, through a small claims court proceeding, and as we stand here today, Your Honors, 5 years after delivery of this vehicle, for heaven's sake, this couldn't have been the most effective way to get their $400 back.
Aren't you making really a waiver argument, though, that they waived their right to invoke any Lemon Law remedies by accepting this vehicle based upon the negotiation with the dealer that the scratches that they knew about at the time would be repaired? And isn't that contrary to public policy?
In order to waive a right, you need to have a right. The right never arose here, and that's what the Court of Appeals was saying, is that this right does not manifest itself until delivery, and it doesn't manifest itself when the consumer knows about it.
Go ahead.
I think the Court of Appeals turned the issue too hidden and or obvious known defects. So they said if this was hidden, it would have been covered, but because the plaintiffs knew about this, therefore they would not fall under the Lemon Law. And that's why I asked the question, and just find that if Chrysler did not want to be responsible, they wrote the warranty. In other words, they could have said clearly that installation of accessories is not covered under this warranty, period. Right. But they went ahead and they said that if you use our parts and they're installed by a dealer, they are covered.
Right.
So that is what I think would be an issue, that Chrysler controls the warranty, so they would be able to make that change. But as it's written, and you construe the, if there is an ambiguity, you construe that against the drafter of the warranty.
Correct. And I think that goes to what Justice Sykes was talking about earlier. The issue here today, although I continue to take the position that it was not covered by the warranty, the issue before the court today is what the Court of Appeals determined, and that is, yes, so what if it's under the warranty? The Lemon Law was not intended to cover this, and the Lemon Law does not apply here within the context of the legislative intent. And within the harm that we're trying to prevent, the Lemon Law does not apply here, regardless of whether there's warranted coverage.
Why is that, counsel? Does the Lemon Law not apply
because the consumer was aware of the defect, that's what part of it is. Or does the lemon law not apply because this was a defect imparted by the dealer and not the manufacturer?
Well, the Court of Appeals determined that it was because they knew about it. And I would argue that the intent of the lemon law was to create quality control in the manufacturer, and we don't have that here either. So if both of those elements of your question are not present, I think for both reasons this court could find that the Dieter case should not be overruled. I mean, the very conclusion of the Court of Appeals decision, I think, is very, very compelling, because they touch on the fact that coverage under its warranty, and thus under the lemon law, did not begin until Dieter and Hermes accepted delivery of the vehicle. And within the context of the facts of this case, this is a very unique case, because you've got clear-cut knowledge and acceptance of the vehicle, which was damaged by a party unrelated to the manufacturer.
But it was acceptance. It was certainly a contingent acceptance, wasn't it? I mean, they didn't say, yeah, we'll take it and we hope that you can fix it. They took it based upon their belief that this would be fixed.
Right. And that's very true. But who made that representation? It was made by the dealership. The dealership should be held responsible for that. The remedy is with the dealership for those representations that they made. As the Court of Appeals stated in the Malone decision, that for purposes of warranty and lemon law, the representations or the misrepresentations of the dealership's employees is not an automatic agency tie-in to the manufacturer, their warranty, or lemon law.
Yeah, the difference in the Malone case was basically that this was a non-Nissan part, different than here, where it was I assume that Mopar and Chrysler, that is a Chrysler part, and that is the major difference, and the fact that the warranty implies, at least, that it would be covered. So that is the distinguishing between that case and this case.
I think that is a distinction, absolutely. But I think I'm not saying that the Malone holding fits in perfectly. I'm saying the reasoning in Malone is very appropriate in this case. The misrepresentation, if you will, or the promise to fix this defect came from a non-Chrysler agent. It came from the dealership.
But this case isn't a misrepresentation case. This is a lemon law case which turns on the warranty. Chrysler assumed responsibility for a warranty of the dealer's conduct with respect to installation of genuine Mopar parts. And that being the case, we get to this second issue that I keep trying to come back to, which is whether there's any legal basis for the Court of Appeals holding that the lemon law doesn't apply when the consumer knows of the defect at the time of delivery. And the Court of Appeals spent some time talking about when the warranty becomes effective at the time of delivery, and then ultimately said that's not important. What's important here is the knowledge on the part of the consumer of the defect, which is essentially a waiver argument. In other words, the Court of Appeals is saying, if you have knowledge of this, whatever it is that's wrong with this vehicle, and take delivery anyway, you've waived your lemon law arguments. And the lemon law specifically says that no waiver of the remedies under this chapter shall be valid.
I think what the Court of Appeals is saying is you can't create a lemon law. It goes back to my original response. The lemon law does not, the lemon law coverage, if you will, does not take place until delivery. It's right in the statute.
But it covers everything that happened prior to delivery if you, the manufacturer, assumed responsibility for it, right?
Just to
focus this analysis on when the time started running,
okay,
is to ignore the whole purpose of this law, because yes, the warranty starts running at the time of delivery, but it covers everything that occurred prior if your warranty says you're assuming responsibility for it, right?
If the manufacturer assumes responsibility.
And I know that you dispute that, but the Court of Appeals disagreed with you and said, yeah, you've got the liability here under your warranty. And then they talked about when that started to run, but said that's not really important. What's important here is the consumer's knowledge of these defects and the knowledge of the defects waived any remedy, although they didn't use the term waiver because then they clearly would be running contrary to the express provisions of the statute.
Well, but I think the Court of Appeals' logic or reasoning, especially in the last two pages of their decision, clearly points out that the Lemon Law has a purpose. It has a starting point. It has a purpose. It is there in order to create a safe and fair playing field. And just as the court said in Malone, we're not here to upset that balance and make it too much in favor of the alleged victim. What we have here...
By finding liability here under the Lemon Law, how is that balance upset?
Well, actually, I can think of a number of scenarios where it would be. We create a huge loophole for street smart consumers. Those people that go out and buy hail damaged vehicles or go to the dealership where they're having end of the year sales on vehicles that have cracks or dings or hail damage or paint overspray. Suddenly you have created, under this case, an opportunity for them to say that this vehicle is a qualifying vehicle.
Not if your warranty excludes that. You can write a warranty that says we're not covering hail damage, right?
And that's why I guess my position has always been that this warranty doesn't cover it. If you take page six, that talks about alterations and modifications. In the very beginning, it's talking about situations where the warranty would be void if certain things were done.
Well, yeah. Can a manufacturer and dealer get out from underneath the Lemon Law, examples that you pulled, by stating that the vehicle is sold as is?
A manufacturer could, but they don't. They provide warranties because it...
Right, but at the end of the year sale, couldn't the dealer simply say, look, this car was in a hailstorm, so you're taking it as is?
Well, the dealer...
would get them out from underneath the Lemon Law, right?
The dealership already does. The standard contract already does say that the dealership is selling it as is and that the consumer and the manufacturer of that product will have a contractual relationship.
But the Lemon Law sets up a relationship between the manufacturer and the dealer, does it not?
No, because the dealership is specifically excluded from coverage under the Lemon Law. The dealership is specifically excluded under the Lemon Law.
Counsel, if you were going to rewrite the Court of Appeals opinion, let's say, arguably, that the Court of Appeals is incorrect when it says the Lemon Law does not apply in this case because the consumers were aware of the defect before delivery of the vehicle. Let's say that's a wrong statement of the law. I suppose your position is that you should still prevail, even if that's determined to be a wrong statement of the law. Am I correct?
Correct.
Why should you prevail regardless of that premise of the law?
Primarily because this is a damage to a vehicle unrelated to the manufacturer's product or its warranty. And what the warranty covers, because the scratch was introduced outside of that relationship. It's a defect, not in the material, workmanship, or factory preparation.
Doesn't that get you then back to what's been discussed at the other end of the bench, that is page 68, looks like it's covered, if there's ambiguity, it's construed against the drafter. How do you respond to that?
My response is twofold. One, you can't take the middle of the warranty out of the context of the very essence of the warranty, which is the first two pages saying when does the warranty start and what does it cover. To say we create coverage in a warranty because of exceptions and exclusions, I think misinterprets the entire document. And it's clear-cut language at the very beginning of the warranty saying it's only effective at the point of delivery and it's only effective for defects in material, workmanship, or factory preparation. Let me answer it this way further with a hypothetical situation. if you go to Best Buy and you buy a refrigerator, and some refrigerators are very pricey these days, and you decide, I like this refrigerator, but I want a different door on it with an ice dispenser. And you ask the dealership or Best Buy here to replace that door. And they say, fine, we'll take care of that. We'll put an ice dispenser door on there. And they do, and in the course of doing it, they scratch the entire exterior of that refrigerator. Under that scenario, you wouldn't go to GE or a Manna. You wouldn't expect them, under the terms of their warranty for that product, to cover that damage. Their warranty is not significantly different from our situation here.
Do they? Well, but the point I think that other justices are making is that why would you put in, except for genuine Mopar accessories approved by Chrysler for dealer installation, why put that in at all? I mean, that is the, if a person would be reading that, well, then obviously you don't cover installation of accessories, except we don't cover installation of accessories except for genuine Mopar parts put in by the dealers.
And once again, I think, I don't want to take that out of context. I think that's in reference to those situations where this warranty would be voided for putting on aftermarket accessories. We won't void the warranty. In the first paragraph, we won't void this warranty if you put on Mopar accessories. See, because that whole context there is talking about alterations and modifications are excluded.
Excluded. And then it goes on and says, however, your Chrysler warranties don't cover any part that is not a Chrysler-supplied part. These warranties also don't cover the cost of any repairs or adjustments that might be caused by or needed because of the use of installation of non-Chrysler parts, equipment, materials, or additives. Then you give examples of types of alteration that are not covered, include, but are not limited to, the installation of accessories. Then, in quotes, except for genuine Mopar accessories approved by Chrysler for dealer installation. And then you go on.
Right, and I understand the court's concern with that. The problem that I have with that language is that it presupposes when that accessory is being installed, i.e. during the warranty period, and under the context that has been presented here today, it presupposes that it's being installed appropriately and not being done with the consumer's knowledge of the condition prior to delivery. I mean, I just keep coming back to where the Court of Appeals decision is, in that they're saying, wait a second, we're not going to go that far with the Lemon Law because this consumer saw the scratches, struck a deal with the dealership to have it fixed. We're not going to hold the manufacturer responsible under that situation.
Mr. Dublin, yeah. Most of the time you've been arguing, you've been discussing the date of delivery. When I go back and look at the warranty, I don't see any definition. Is there one for delivery?
Yes, there is, Your Honor.
Where is it?
If you look on page 3 of the warranty, the first paragraph under what's covered, the basic warranty begins on your truck's warranty start date, which is the earlier of one, the date you take delivery.
I'm asking, is delivery defined?
Oh, no, but I mean, I think...
Is it defined in the statute?
I don't believe so. I think it's not been an issue in the case. Everybody has agreed that delivery has been the 16th, the date the vehicle has been brought into the possession.
Well,
when I look at
what's covered, which you've just pointed out, and which I had looked at previously, it also talks about first put into service. Is that defined someplace? They give some examples, but is it defined at all?
Well, put into service, I think, within the statute is service date would be in the context of this provision in the warranty is, for example, a demonstrator vehicle or an executive-driven vehicle?
Those are the examples you're giving, but I'm asking, is it defined any place? What does put into service mean? Does that mean if the prospective purchaser takes it out and takes it 5 miles one way and 5 miles the other way, has it been put into service?
No, I think it's always been understood that the put into service applies specifically to those vehicles, such as demonstrators and executives, when, for example, an employee at the dealership puts into service that demonstrator vehicle, which then is subsequently sold to a consumer. And so the start date for purposes of the warranty and the start date for purposes of the Lemon Law in those circumstances would be the in-service date of that vehicle, that demonstrator.
Well, let me give you an example. Let's say that the purchasers of the vehicle want a particular color, and the vehicle isn't at the dealership where they're going to make the purchase. The colored vehicle that they want is at a dealership 40 miles away. So someone drives that vehicle from one dealership to the other, to the one where the purchase is going to be made. Has that vehicle been put into service?
I don't believe so for purposes of the warranty or the Lemon Law.
But there's no definition that you can point to?
No.
No case law that you can point to?
You can point to the case law with respect to Hughes and Malone and all the cases where they say that the beginning date for purposes of Lemon Law is the date of delivery.
But that isn't what your warranty says. Your warranty says the date of delivery or the date first put into service. Right, let me ask you another question. In your research, and again, I'll ask you the same question I asked other counsel. In your research, did you find any other state which has a Lemon Law which made a decision similar to what our Court of Appeals did? In other words, zeroed in on the issue of awareness of the defect prior to delivery.
There are no cases that I can find where this fact scenario has been submitted, nor where a court has determined, as the Court of Appeals in our case has determined. And simply put, I think the Court of Appeals was making a decision here that based upon the intent of the Lemon Law, we have no desire to push the Lemon Law that far. I think this court should reverse the Court of Appeals decision. I think the Court of Appeals made a logical stopping point, and I would ask this court to uphold the Court of Appeals. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Govern. We have 5 minutes rebuttal, Mr. Magna, if you wish to use it.
Just very briefly, I wanted to point out that this warranty does exclude hail damage very clearly. So if the car is damaged by hail, there's no coverage. The same with tornadoes or earthquakes or many, many exclusions.
Also tree sap.
Tree sap. And I think it had something to do with bees also was in there. So there's
the governor's client knows how to write a warranty.
They are Chrysler. One other thing, and Mr. Govern said this, one of the purposes of the Lemon Law was to stand behind the product that they manufacture. And the Mopar, they encourage people to buy Mopar parts. They make money when they sell their genuine parts. And whether they build them or they authorize them or someone else builds these parts, they approve those parts and they encourage those parts to be sold rather than some aftermarket part.
Counsel, would it make any difference if the facts were changed such that in the negotiation with the dealership after observing the problem, the customer said, look, you know, knock a few hundred off this for me, will you? And so the dealer cuts the commission a couple hundred to keep the sale. Then
Is there a risk of the customer then coming back against the manufacturer?
I think, now that didn't happen here. There was no reduction in price, and there were no really any negotiations. It was just...
Well, that's my question, because I think that's a rather common experience. If I really want this car and it's got a little problem here, you know, okay, how much are you going to cut? You know, 500, okay.
I don't think the negotiations with the dealer could change the warranty. The warranty is...
That's my concern. I'm concerned about abuse. So your opposing counsel says there may be customer abuse and, you know, loopholes. I mean, under the rule of law that you're asking us to assume and interpretation of the warranty, that the customer could both get a reduced price and hold Chrysler to warranty for delivering the product they want. Is that right?
That's not exactly what I said. I think... If you got a reduced price, first of all, reduced prices are quite common anyway. They will knock money off in many sets of circumstances. I think it's going to have to, if there is a legitimate reduction in price because of some problem with the car, I think that Chrysler's going to have to be involved on that too.
Oh, I don't know. I think the salesman, I mean, I go on the internet and I see the cushion that the salesman has. Looks like he's got quite a cushion there oftentimes. He's just going to knock it off. $350. Well, happy customer, get out, talk to your friends.
If he knocks off $350, I believe it's not going to affect anything.
Your customer can still maintain a cause of action under the Lemon Law against the manufacturer.
Well, first, he still can maintain a warranty repairs if there are problems with the car. I do not think that would prevent him from bringing in his car for warranty repairs. And if they wouldn't repair it, yes, I would say that.
Mr. Magna, does the record reflect anything in terms of the mileage on the vehicle at the time that your clients finally picked it up and took it home?
Yes, it would. It would reflect that on the contract, on the application for title. It was 35 miles.
Is there anything in the record that indicates how that 35 miles was put on the vehicle?
Not in this record, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, I don't have anything else to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Magna. Thank you, Mr. Govern. And that ends the hearing on 980958. The court is in recess until 1:45.